This morning is Kronberg versus LaRouche, and Mr. Amook, whenever you're ready, we'll hear from you.
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Amook, and I represent Barbara Boyd and the other defendants and appellants in this case. This appeal raises four issues. Today in my oral argument, I would like to focus on the first three issues, which challenge two of the district court's rulings.
Before you get to that, Mr. Yes. Mook, do we have jurisdiction over this appeal?
Your Honor, a final order was entered by the district court dismissing the case without prejudice, so we are appealing a final order of the court.
How can it be final if further litigation is allowed by the court's own order?
Well, Your Honor, there has been a final determination in the case filed. A new case was filed by the plaintiff, and as we set forth in our papers...
It's the same case, isn't it?
It is the same case, Your Honor. But a final order was entered by the district court, and we have... challenged three significant rulings of the court in that case.
If it was final, how can there be an identical case?
Well, it was a final order with respect to this case, which dismissed it.
But that case is exactly the same as this case, is it not? I thought you just responded to Judge Niemeyer that it's the identical case.
But with respect to the court's...
It's the identical complaint.
It turns out to be the identical complaint.
Well, it doesn't turn out to be, in fact...
Right.
The district court denied your 12B6 motion, but granted, in the form of either discovery sanctions or failure to prosecute, a dismissal of a case, and everybody understood, barring limitations or some other impediment, plaintiff was going to be right back in court. And indeed, plaintiff is right back in court. And in that second action, you're exactly where you were at the time of the dismissal before.
Your Honor.
So how can we do anything here other than on the complaint, the legal sufficiency of the complaint, do anything other than render an advisory opinion?
Well, Your Honor, again, there was an entry of a final order granting.
That begs the question. Judge Davis is asking whether it is final. Whether the judge says it's final doesn't make it final.
I understand, Your Honor. Certainly, with respect to our argument pertaining to the motion to dismiss, because...
Normally, that's not appealable. You've denied that the court has said the complaint's legally sufficient. Let's assume, just for purposes of discussion, that we agree with the court, that the complaint's legally sufficient on its face.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does that leave us now?
Well, Your Honor, then we have an unreviewable order, or potentially, of... the court's grant of dismissal without prejudice, denying our motion to dismiss the case with prejudice due to the sanctionable conduct of the plaintiff.
So what you really want us to review, I think, if I'm understanding, is the court's discretionary refusal to impose any greater sanction than dismissal as a discovery sanction. Do I have that right?
Your Honor, certainly review of a court's determination with respect to a motion for sanctions is reviewed by this court on an abuse of discretion
right.
basis.
But let's say the sanction was the imposition of a $250 cost and nothing else. They awarded you cost of $250. Could you appeal that?
Yes, Your Honor, we could.
Why?
And, well, can I bring it back to this case? In this case, our...
I understand, but this case, the sanction happened to have been dismissal without prejudice. I want to use a sanction that's not dismissal without prejudice. I'd like to use a sanction which is monetary. And the court, you had a discovery disputes, ongoing discovery disputes, which, incidentally, was wrapped up in connection with the attorney representation, which is a little peculiar, too. The court denied the former U.S. attorney from representing the plaintiff in this case, and I still can't figure out why that's so. But even so, they did it. The local attorney said, I'm just local attorney and I have a medical problem. I want out because you knocked out the other attorney. So at the time the court issues the sanction, it lets the attorney out, and there's no new attorney in. As a matter of fact, it had 0 minutes after letting this attorney out to respond to the discovery, even though she was engaging in discovery at the time this was. You had another dispute. There's another pending motion to compel discovery after the recommendation from the magistrate judge. There are ongoing open discovery issues still.
Correct, Your Honor. At the time the district court dismissed this case without prejudice, the plaintiff did have new counsel who had entered his appearance, and that is the counsel in the appeal.
How long before did he enter his appearance?
I believe the counsel entered his appearance on or about November 9th or 10th, Your Honor.
And when did the court issue its order?
It issued its order December 7th, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the plaintiff was represented by counsel.
About a few weeks.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if the court, instead of dismissing without prejudice, had imposed a sanction then, okay, a monetary sanction, that would not be appealable, right?
If the court had imposed a monetary sanction, I believe it would be appealable because there would be a final
order. Immediately
just
appealable.
That's a discovery order.
Oh, I'm sorry, because of the discovery. If the court had...
We don't review discovery orders.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Go ahead.
I think the question is it immediately appealable?
He says he agrees it's not.
Right. It would be appealable at some point, perhaps, by somebody, but it wouldn't be appealable right now.
Yeah, I misunderstood, Your Honor. I was thinking that the court may have dismissed the case without prejudice, but imposed sanctions.
No, my hypothetical is monetary. It's a monetary sanction, and that's all it imposed. It would not be immediately appealable.
Correct, because that would not have been the entry of a final order in that case if that case was ongoing.
So the question then arises is if the sanction, instead of being a monetary order, is dismissal without prejudice, which allows the same complaint to be filed again.
In a new case, however, a new case does need to be filed.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, the prior case is ended.
I understand. You have to file another filing fee.
Correct, and a new case has, right, and it's a new case.
But do you see this as, you see that we have jurisdiction because this is a final order as to your rights as you think they exist, which is a right to have this litigation ended permanently.
Correct,
Your Honor. Is that correct? That's how you see it as a final order.
Right.
Because you assert, we'll decide whether you're right or wrong about that, you assert that under the circumstances of this case, you had a right to have this case dismissed permanently so that the claims against you, your clients, would be ended forever.
That is correct.
But you think that your rights that you were entitled to under the law and the facts of this case, the final order in this case saying that's not so, you face litigation again.
That is correct,
Your Honor. That's why you see it as an appealable. It's not any interlocutory order. It's just an appeal of a final order by a district court.
Correct, Your Honor, because we filed a motion to dismiss the entire case due to the sanctionable conduct of the plaintiff.
As a discovery sanction.
But, Your Honor...
You'd already lost your 12B6 motion, right?
We had lost the 12B6 motion.
Right, and you cannot appeal the denial of a 12B6 motion, right?
But that became the...
I understand things became...
Right,
but
in
you
and
agree
of itself,
you cannot
that is
appeal
correct.
The denial of a 12B6
that
motion.
That is correct during the
right,
course
so
of the case.
Assume 18 months go by. After denial of a motion under 12B6, and a plaintiff is not behaving herself well in discovery and not complying with court's orders and so forth, and you seek sanctions under Rule 37, and the district court, for whatever reason, and as Judge Niemeyer suggested, it's not entirely clear why people did what they did in this record, but the judge decides that the appropriate sanction is a dismissal without prejudice, as opposed to a $3,500 award or a $10,000 award or whatever. That's the discovery sanction. Is it your position now that you get to appeal that 18-month-old denial of a 12B6 motion?
Well, our position would be that we can. And
you can.
Particularly because it is capable. It is akin, let's say, to the issue of whether there's a case or controversy.
I suggest there's a gate you have to get through, and it may be something that Judge Shedd was observing. If we have a sanction which dismisses without prejudice, and your argument is it should have been with prejudice.
Yes.
If it's with prejudice, it'd clearly be final, right?
Correct.
So if we were to rule on the sanctions motion as a final judgment at this point and say the district court acted within its discretion and affirm the sanction, where does that put you now? Are you then entitled to review the 12B6?
Before this court, Your Honor?
Right now, yes.
We would say that we should be able to do that because a final order was entered. And again,
no, Judge, I asked you, what legal theory would you be entitled to a review of the denial of the 12B6? As opposed to an abuse of discretion in the character of the dismissal as a sanction. Do you understand? You don't understand the question.
My hypothetical is I want you to assume that we say the judge acted within his discretion in imposing this sanction.
Okay.
He could have denied any sanctions, but imposing this sanction. So at that point, the sanction of dismissal without prejudice stands.
Correct.
Under the hypothetical.
Right.
Can we, if we reach that conclusion, reach the 12B6 motion ruling?
Your Honor, I believe that you could do that under a doctrine. It's akin to capable of repetition because it is being repeated. But even if that's not the case, Your Honor, the basis for our appeal of the denial of the motion to dismiss as sanctions our challenge is based upon the fact that the judge used an incorrect legal standard in terms of assessing whether or not what type of appropriate sanction should be imposed.
Why do you say that?
Because, Your Honor, the district court judge adopted in toto the magistrate judge's findings. The magistrate judge's findings were that during the entire discovery period of this case, that the plaintiff engaged in a repeated, continuous course of conduct that evidenced her failure to comply with her obligations under the discovery rules and the orders of the court, specific orders of the court.
And I thought the judge meant by that, he couldn't tell whether it was the lawyer who was screwing up or the plaintiff or both of them and so forth.
And due to that discovery abuse, which the court found created prejudice to the defendants, that it was in bad faith, and that it created prejudice to the administration of justice through the judicial system, the court said that the appropriate sanctions, given this set of facts, would be dismissal with prejudice, but for the fact that the court was uncertain as to who bore the primary personal culpability for
those.
And you've
got to convince us that it was an abuse of discretion for the judge to reason in that fashion.
And our argument, Your Honor, is that the primary personal culpability standard that the magistrate judge set forth in the report and recommendation adopted by the district court is a standard that does not find any support either in the Supreme Court law of the Link versus Wabash Railroad some 50 years ago or this court's more recent decision in Robinson versus Wicks Filtration, where the court said that if there are errors or omissions of counsel, the litigant is the client is to be charged with
those. One second,
those.
Is that the fact in the ruling of the case, or is that the absolute law on point? Do you suggest that a court would have no authority to dismiss without the ultimate penalty, dismiss with prejudice? What if the facts in a hypothetical case is that the lawyer lied to the client about what progress was being made, that the client was completely conscientious, checked every day, and the lawyer lied to the client? You're saying that the court would have to impose as a sanction a dismissal with prejudice?
No, Your Honor. We're not saying that in that set of circumstances.
All right. Well, wait 1 second. So, in other words, then do you concede that the culpability or lack of culpability of the client may be taken into account by the district court in fashioning the appropriate remedy?
In certain circumstances which do not apply here, but in these circumstances...
But wait 1 second. So you let me just be sure I understand your argument. You say that we look at the dismissal as a discovery sanction by abuse of discretion, correct?
Correct.
And you say that the law, that the abuse of discretion was an error of law made by the court.
Correct. Given these facts.
Just let me finish. In that, the court in this instance took into account some question of the culpability and the responsibility of the client. That's your argument?
No, Your Honor, what the court said was that there was evidence that the client was personally culpable for some of the discovery abuses.
But I'm saying to you, but the court didn't dismiss it, the case with prejudice, so apparently it's clear the court took into account, based on what you just read earlier, that the court took into account they weren't sure how much culpability the client had. So the court obviously did take into account in its final order the culpability of the client. Isn't that correct?
But the court said that dismissal with prejudice would not be appropriate because the court could not find, based upon the record, primary personal culpability of the client. And to set forth that type of legal hurdle.
Do you have any case that interprets Rule 37B2A2? To mean what you say. That's the rule authorizes the dismissal.
Correct. Under 37B, for one of the reasons, one of the sanctions may be dismissal with prejudice.
It may be. That's the ultimate sanction. But the court has broad discretion in ruling on this, and especially in view of the fact the court has already ruled that this woman has stated a claim for which relief can be granted. And so now the question is, do I deny her claim altogether because of the conduct of discovery? And the conduct of discovery is a very judgmental question. And the court here concluded that I'm not so sure the ultimate sanction is appropriate because of various factors, but one of which is this interplay between the attorney and the client. And, of course, during this whole period, we had the fact that the court threw out the original attorney. One sentence. Tell me why the court threw out the original attorney.
Because he had been a government attorney.
Against LaRouche.
Correct. And he possessed confidential government information which could be used to the material detriment of the defendants.
What confidential information does he have that LaRouche didn't have?
He had information that he was able to obtain during the course of the prosecutions from other witnesses.
Well, why isn't that discoverable? In other words, I don't understand how you can have a conflict of interest when they're prosecuting in the same direction against LaRouche, and he's a public prosecutor, and he only has information that is obtainable in the legal process.
But he obtained that information during the course of the legal process was the prosecution.
I understand.
Is the grand jury, was that the problem?
Well, there was evidence that he had from the grand jury, from confidential informants, from other witnesses.
But evidence from a grand jury stands on a different footing from evidence from a confidential informant, I suspect.
That is correct, Your Honor. But so he presented evidence to the grand jury not only in the prosecution in the Eastern District of Virginia.
Is that what the court relied on, information obtained during the grand jury?
It relied on the information that Mr. Markin had attained during the course of his continuous prosecution. Pardon?
Was there information identified?
Some information was identified, yes, Your Honor. Did include the fact that, as I recall, that Mr. Markin had presented evidence to the grand jury. He also had information generally that about the nature of the events giving rise to the prosecution, and that was confidential government information that he had obtained.
All right. That's not before us.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, and
we'll hear from Mr. Del Sordo.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, James Del Sordo for the appellee, Mariel Kronberg. Your Honors, have before you a case where the appellants are seeking to substitute their judgment for the
judgment. Do we have jurisdiction to hear both issues right now?
Well, based on Judge Davis's analysis.
Not based on your argument. You're based on your argument to us. If you ever argued we don't have jurisdiction in this case. Have you ever argued that to us?
I have not. And
but now I have to listen to the questions. Do you want to argue that?
Sure, Your Honor.
I'd say.
I mean, it seems fairly obvious that Judge Trenga's decision was not final, even though he called a final decision, because the case was going
Why isn't it final if the appellant is arguing that the dismissal should have been with prejudice as an abuse of discretion not to enter that? And it seems to me if it was with prejudice, that ends the case, right?
I would agree, Your Honor.
And so, and the court said, I'm not doing anything more in this case. This is my order. Maybe it's not final if you leave it without prejudice. I don't know the answer to that. But if the challenge is to that order, and we assume we can reach that order because one disposition would make it final, which is a little strange, but let's assume that's so. What's that do to the rest of the what if we assume that the court acted appropriately, not appropriately, within its discretion?
If you assume that the court acted within its discretion, then the case was refiled in January, December of 2010. We presume that the same motion to dismiss will be filed. The case will proceed, and then we'll have a final.
Very strange sanction, isn't it?
Well, it's obvious. It's not strange in that it's permitted by the rules, Your Honor. The district judge can.
Well, you know, you can do strange things within the rules.
Well, Your Honor, I've seen cases dismissed without prejudice for a number of
as a discovery sanction.
You see, what's going to happen now is the let's assume that there's a second case that's been filed in accordance with the court's order. There's going to be a motion to dismiss again at 12B6. There's going to be a ruling by the court.
Yes.
And presumably the court's going to end it in the same place, and then they're going to discard discovery all over again, right?
Right.
And repeat everything that's been done.
Maybe not necessarily, Your Honor. Everything that was done by a counsel that was not effectively supporting their client.
You don't see the comedy in this type of a sanction?
I can see the comedy. C-O-M-I-T-Y, the appropriateness in that the judge heard everything that the defendants, now the appellants, had to say. They heard every bit of information. They actually assessed.
What kind of a sanction is it to say I'm going to wipe out everything that's happened in this case and let them start over?
It's a sanction in that Ms. Kronberg has to do the same work twice. Presumably,
but she hadn't done any work. That's part of the problem. Is it sanctioned anything other than just paying the filing fee all over again?
Well, it is more of a sanction, Your Honor, because when I joined the case prior to the court's ruling, I submitted our trial exhibits. I was operating.
Okay, but some work had been done.
So, yeah, further work. I mean, her prior counsel had apparently poisoned the well sufficiently by his misdeeds that Judge Trenga and the magistrate.
Do we have counsel gave an answer about capable of repetition or something, but do we have pendant appellate jurisdiction here to look at the 12B6 denial if, as Judge Niemeyer has suggested, we were to conclude that the judge acted within the district court's discretion to dismiss the case without prejudice as a discovery sanction? Could we then move on to consider the legal sufficiency of the 12B6 denial? Or the legal sufficiency of the complaint, as it were.
If what we were talking about was a final dismissal without prejudice, with prejudice, I apologize, so that the case was given the ultimate sanction, as Judge Niemeyer called it, there, I believe, after that could be an appeal.
No, I'm asking you, on this present appeal, if we conclude that the order of dismissal without prejudice is sufficiently final, at least to permit appellate review of that order, and if we agree that that order was within the district court's discretion, dismissal without prejudice, could we then, through some notion of pendant appellate jurisdiction, jump over and examine the sufficiency of the complaint in this case? Could we do that, you think?
I would think so, because...
Why isn't it hypothetical at that point? I mean, it's an advisory opinion at that point. The case, if we affirm the sanction, the case is gone.
I misunderstand that. I misunderstood what Judge Davis was saying.
Oh, he's asking somewhat of the same thing, a little different side of it.
Yeah, I apologize. If you say Judge Trenga acted appropriately and the case is...
Let's see if you can get it right this time.
I'm sorry, Judge Fitt. If you say that Judge Trenga acted appropriately and the case was appropriately dismissed without prejudice, that he did not abuse his discretion, then there is no... I don't see what you would be reviewing then, because you're just reviewing a discovery sanction, and then the case should be permitted to continue. And then we would have...
But
why
wouldn't we be looking at this case and say the other side's arguing there's a final order in this case that's reviewable? There is, isn't there? There's a final order in this case that's reviewable, isn't there?
There is an order by Judge Trenga that is identified as a final order that dismissed the case without prejudice.
Is that reviewable?
It is a discovery sanction, and the case is continued. There is a new...
Is that reviewable is my question. Is that... And if you say it's not, tell me why it's not reviewable.
Because the case was not fully disposed of, because it was only dismissed without prejudice.
I know that, but the point is, I think you're conflating an appeal by an appellant who receives a dismissal without prejudice on a domino sugar, in which we sometimes say we don't have jurisdiction because the person who... received it without prejudice, you can do something to change it. So you aren't harmed because right. You can reinstate your case. This is the flip side of that. This is a litigant who claims, I had a right to have this case dismissed. Let's just talk about the abuse sanction first. And he claims under the law, he may be right, he may be wrong, but he claims under the law to us that on these facts and circumstances, even under the abuse of discretion standard, the dismissal has to be with prejudice. He could be wrong about that, but he claims thereby he's damaged because he has a right to never face this litigation again. And if that's the case, which I think it likely is in this case, then why wouldn't we have the authority? We may want to not get to, for some other reason, not get to the merits and look at the 12B6, but he claims in this litigation, which he now claims he has a final order which damages him, that he also had a right to have it dismissed on the 12B6 matter. So you have a 12B6 matter that he claims was improperly ruled on, that he should have won on, that's now before us in a final order. Why wouldn't we have the authority to review that?
Your Honor,
you could argue that for some reason we shouldn't, but why wouldn't we have the authority to do it?
I think, Your Honor, if you're correct that you determine that Judge Trenga's decision dismissing without prejudice is a final decision, then you could review all of his decisions leading up to that.
Yeah, but it's a final decision only because under one ruling, if it's with prejudice, it's clearly final.
Right.
But that's no different than appealing his motion to dismiss. The court denied his motion to dismiss. If the court affirmed his, I mean, and he says the court was wrong, in which case the case ends, so he could appeal it.
Right, or I could appeal.
And we recognize that appealing a motion to a denial of a motion to dismiss is not final. But he appeals it and he says, well, it will end the case and it will be final if I win. So the question, I don't think that's the question. I think the question is the nature of this ruling, this sanction, without prejudice. It ends that case number, but I'm not sure it really ends the case in the real world because the complaint was filed a few weeks later. And 2 weeks later, or whatever it was, and the same case is there, and we got the same issues. And the question now is whether the court should tolerate the notion that we're going to have two 12B6s, we're going to have two same discoveries, and so forth. It goes against the grain, and I know it doesn't fit the rules perfectly, but there's got to be some way to handle this case without duplicating process. It's already drug out and been spun too many ways to satisfy good process.
Well, Your Honor, to assert as to it's inappropriate because there would be a duplicative process, under Virginia law, you can non-suit a case up until the case goes to
federal
the...
federal law.
I understand that. I'm just getting you on...
Is this a function of the rocket docket? Why are you smiling?
I am not going to...
I'm reluctant to... It's a serious question.
I do think, Your Honor...
It's a serious question. Okay. Some judges just want to close a case. And I'm not saying that's what happened here, but sometimes there's a lot of pressure to just close this number. It doesn't matter if a new number is coming in the door tomorrow. Let's close this number. You can be candid with this court.
Your Honor, I think it's a function of the speed in the Eastern District. However, not for the basis that you're saying, that Judge Trenger would want to...
I'm not suggesting that.
I do think the pace of litigation in the Eastern District is so much faster than other federal district courts that it pushes the discovery process at a speed.
So in a lot of other districts, there would have been a $2,500 monetary sanction imposed here? Extension of the discovery deadline?
I think that's exactly what would have happened in another district. In other districts that I've litigated in talking to friends in other places.
Maybe we should be thinking about in the discussion here in the courtroom as to whether the sanction of dismissal without prejudice is appropriate sanction. It seems to me it prolificates the litigation and doesn't sanction anybody.
Well, it certainly does sanction Ms. Kronberg because she may have decided that her resources were exhausted, that she had had such...
It's just the opposite. It sanctions the other side because they have to file the 12B6 again, and they have to file the discovery again.
Understood. Presumably, they've already drafted all those documents once, Your Honor, so it's not that. But I will say that I think what would have happened in other districts, it probably would have extended the discovery deadline. But there is a...
What is the basis for the sanction of dismissal without prejudice? What's the case to be made?
Because, Your Honor, as you just said earlier, or actually it was Judge Shedd who said it, what if the lawyer is misrepresenting what's going on to the client?
No, I'm not talking about picking an interim, refusing to dismiss it with prejudice. Why pick dismissal without prejudice? What sanction does that impose?
Well, that a litigant, once their case is dismissed, even without prejudice, may say, well, this was such a horrible process, I don't want to go through this again. Or, I've seen what this other side does in discovery. That's not something I want to do. I think it's an appropriate sanction in the appropriate circumstances, and I don't think we should take away from a district court judge.
I'm trying to figure out in what circumstances is it ever appropriate as a sanction against the plaintiff.
I think here it was an appropriate sanction because we have a litigant who had her first attorney dismissed under a conflict issue.
Take a case where the discovery has gone on for 6 months, it's been double, triple expensive, it's been terribly conducted, and the court dismisses without prejudice the case and lets the plaintiff go ahead and start over again.
Your Honor, not knowing what each of the parties did, I can't say whether that's appropriate or not.
Is there any sanction, is there any punishment or penalty imposed against the plaintiff?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is it?
Well, as I said, when I came into the case, I was preparing to go to trial, and I was ready to go. I had submitted our trial exhibits and our witness list, so we could have gone to trial. The extra expense is that we have to refile the case and then redo discovery and to go through that whole process again.
All right.
I mean, it is not immaterial for a private citizen to have to go through the litigation process. You know, for lawyers, you know, it's a big deal.
Let's talk about something other than the rocket docket. It strikes me that maybe the district judge looks at this and considers the case to this point to be a mess. and that what has been done in discovery, what litigation strategy some people have taken, it just may be counterproductive. It seems to me it wouldn't be unreasonable for a district judge, assuming that you can dismiss, and I think you can dismiss without prejudice. It didn't seem to me that's necessarily so unreasonable just to say I'm dismissing. Where we are is a do-over. Both back up and see if you really want to do this. And if you want to do it right. But I can't say it all falls on the litigant. It looks like the lawyer's at fault. Yeah, I can't tell who. It doesn't seem to me that that is necessarily any kind of function of the rocket docket. It just may be a judge, a district court, looking at litigation going, this is a mess, and I'm just going to say, stop where we are, do over. Isn't that possible?
Are you suggesting, Your Honor, that a judge would do that sua sponte without a motion before then?
No. I'm just saying in response, wasn't there a motion for sanctions?
There was.
But I'm saying in response to that motion. He just goes, I've got a motion for sanctions. I've got a couple things I can do. I can drop this whole case with prejudice. I don't think that's really fair to the plaintiff because it looks to me that perhaps her lawyer didn't do the plaintiff right. Or he said, I can stop the case and let them start all over again if they so decide to, and do, maybe they'll do it right this time. What's inappropriate about that?
Well, I mean, I think you've posited the exact situation here. I don't know what
I'm
was
saying.
Going
what's
to...
inappropriate about that? If
I,
the judge
I don't think anything is inappropriate about that. If the judge believes that the litigant was not the one who was...
And then is the discovery that's been done, let's get back to the question, can that discovery not be used in the second case?
I don't see why not, Your Honor. They have it. They did third-party discovery and subpoenas. I don't see why there's some sort of magical bar for them just, putting together what they had before.
The question is, another question I have is, we've had some discussion of is this an appropriate sanction or not. What are our options at this point? We can either, as to the discovery sanctions, we can either affirm or reverse. In the question before us, by the litigants at least, whether or not the dismissal should have been without prejudice as it is or with prejudice. Isn't that the issue?
That's the way I understand their appeal, is that they say Judge Trenga abused his discretion and that it clearly should have been dismissed with prejudice. And our position is that Judge Trenga weighed. He's a judge. He used his judgment.
I understand, but do you think there's another option in front of us that we can say, well, he shouldn't have dismissed it at all. He should have just, we would reverse it and say, you're wrong, impose a penalty of $2,000. Do you think that's in front of us?
No, Your Honor. I think you could say that in dicta if you want to.
Well, we can say anything we want to in dicta.
But
I'm just saying as to what the issue is. But of course, I guess we can decide what issues are in front of us, too.
Right.
But it looks to me that the issue, do you agree with me that the issue on the discovery abuse issue is whether or not the dismissal should have been without prejudice, as he ordered, or if that was an error and it should have been with prejudice?
I think you have a...
Is that the issue in front of us?
Yes, Your Honor. You have a one or two decision there. Either he was appropriate and it was properly dismissed.
And the other side's arguing that it should have been with prejudice because they think under the law, under the facts, that's what they argue,
right,
that there was an abuse of discretion because the court made an error of law. Now, we may not agree with that, but that's the argument they're making. And you agree, and you argue they are wrong. They're wrong that there was no law that he violated. There's no case law, no precedent that he violated. And that, in fact, he does have the discretion. We may not like it. We may not think it's the smartest thing to do or whatever. But you argue that it's within his discretion to, in light of everything in the case, to dismiss it without prejudice so that you can start the case again if you so desire.
You have accurately stated my position, Your Honor.
What if we agree with your position on that? What do we do with 12b-6? Can we review that?
I think it would be... I don't think it would make any sense because the issue is going to come up again, presumably, in the new case. Because if you are...
Let me remind you, early in this argument, you said we could review it.
If you found...
You answered my question, and you said we could review it. I do think that's an interesting question.
Okay.
Earlier, you said we could. Now you say we can't.
Then I misremembered my statement, Your Honor. I think it would be inappropriate for you to rule on it if you send the case back, but I guess it is something that you could rule on. I guess that's the distinction.
What if we affirm?
If you affirm Judge Trenga.
Yeah.
Then
the sanction.
If you affirm the sanction and the case appropriately was dismissed
Did
without.
Did we reach the 12B6?
I think you can as a final decision, but I think it would not be wise to do that because the same issue will come up again.
Except it won't come up again because we will have decided it'll be precedent. It won't be law of the case. I guess it won't.
But we don't know what other motions they're going to bring. They may bring that motion again. They may bring a different motion.
In fact, it would be improper under Rule 11 for them. If your complaint in the new case is exactly the same, and I assume the new case is assigned to Judge Stringer, wouldn't it be abusive for them to file exactly the same motion that Judge Stringer's already denied?
If they would come up with exactly the same wording, I don't like to accuse other attorneys of making Rule 11 arguments. I would hope that there is perhaps
they
some
want
nuance.
They to reserve that issue for appeal if nothing else, don't they?
Yeah, I think
that would be appropriate.
Oh, for the record, you mean?
Right, Your Honor. It's like making an objection.
How could that possibly be improper if they have an action filed against them and they think it should be dismissed for 12B6? How in the world could it be improper for a lawyer to file a motion that he thinks is completely proper?
It's bad karma for me to say that someone should be sanctioned, Your Honor. I'm kidding. But no, I agree. They do need to do it to preserve the
argument. Would you do it?
Yes. I'd probably make a slight change to the motion. Probably.
All right. It's a different case. It's a different case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
It's a little messy, and we're going to have to do some more collaboration, but I think our argument's ended.
They do have rebuttal.
Oh, excuse me. You have rebuttal, Mr. Moot.
If you want to take it.
I stand ready for any of the questions. Just kind of three short points, Your Honors. I do want to emphasize here that the sanction imposed by the district court with respect to dismissal without prejudice, I think as Your Honors have brought out, really is the result of that is that there is no sanction whatsoever on the plaintiff. And that...
Well, there could be two. They may be pretty obscure, but one is the refiling fee, and two is a suggestion that Judge Shedd made that the court says this is a total mess, let's start over again.
Right. That may or may not be beneficial to the plaintiff, Your Honor. But clearly, in the situation with respect to the first case, there is harm to the defendants in that case.
But you're arguing to us that the only option that we should consider is that the only sanction, and the way this appeal is framed is, that we have to decide the case should have been dismissed with prejudice. That litigation is over, correct?
That is the way we have teed it up for this court.
And Mr. Moot, I'm not going to take you back to 1891 or whenever the courts of appeals were created by statute. Let's just go back to 1980, around the time the old Fifth Circuit was split up. Have you found a single Court of Appeals reported opinion in which the Court of Appeals panel reversed a district judge's decision to dismiss without prejudice and substituted a dismissal with prejudice?
Your Honor, given the research that I have done, I have not found one.
That, and I'm sure you've looked for that one.
Despite
your best efforts, you couldn't find it. So we'd really be the first Court of Appeals, wouldn't we, to reverse a district judge's decision that a sanction was insufficiently severe.
But
insofar as a dismissal is concerned.
Your Honor, there's nothing wrong with being first.
Okay. And
particularly in this case where the magistrate judge's opinion, it's quite a lengthy opinion, goes through the prejudice to the defendants, the prejudice to the court system.
But then the court ultimately exercised judgment and says without prejudice, regardless of all the reasons, whether they were good or bad, exercised judgment, and the district court adopted that discretionary decision and said, and he could have had a different emphasis on those factors, but he still could have relied on the factors
and
dismissed without prejudice.
But in this situation, I believe, Your Honor, that judgment is subject to reversal, as I mentioned, for two reasons.
Assume we agree that it's within discretion. Should we decide the 12B6, and how can we?
If it's within the court's, yes, you should, because, again, there was an entry of a final order in
except
one.
Except it's moot. The case is dismissed without prejudice. This case is no longer existing, and the 12B6 is, we don't have to decide it, because we decide the sanction's okay.
But again, Your Honor, this is akin to the capable of repetition doctrine that has been developed with respect to situations where, even though with respect to the specific case before a court of appeals, the issue may be moot because the same arguments, the same situation may come up in the future. It is capable of repetition, and the courts have sort of extended their appellate court jurisdiction over those situations where a situation is capable of repetition and that there is a case in controversy.
What if we were to reach the 12B6, and let's assume that we agree with you, with your client, that the district judge should have dismissed it, would we without order say that it was dismissed with or without prejudice?
I think this court could vacate the district court's dismissal and enter an order to have the district court enter a ruling.
No, I think you misunderstood my question. If we accepted your invitation to move from the Rule 37 review, abuse of discretion, to the legal sufficiency of the complaint, and if you were to persuade us that, in fact, the complaint in the first action, the one before us, didn't state a claim. If we would agree with you on that, how would we know whether we should order dismissal of that complaint with or without prejudice?
Because
Your Honor, we were all formerly district judges?
Your Honor, because...
Surely that can't be the answer.
Because the record with respect to the dismissal without prejudice was for conduct that occurred during the course case.
But I'm asking you to go forward with Judge Niemeyer's hypothetical to you. We think the dismissal without prejudice of the case was appropriate, and we affirm that. And you say, well, but it's not moot because you say capable of repetition, et cetera. We can look at the 12B6. Now, I'm suggesting we're all sitting as district judges looking at a 12B6 motion, while at the same time sitting as appellate judges looking at, from the eyes of an appellate judge, the district judge is ruling on the 12B6 motion, which is exactly the same standard, right? Iqbal and Twombly, right? And we say you managed to convince us that the complaint as filed, which Judge Tringa found to be legally sufficient, we disagree. We say Judge Tringa got it wrong. It really should have been dismissed. The complaint should have been dismissed, at least as to the federal claim. Now, my question to you is, how would we possibly decide as an appellate panel whether that dismissal should be with or without prejudice? Because that was one of the options open to Judge Tringa, right? Instead of denying your motion to dismiss, Judge Tringa could have identified some pleading deficiency, right, and dismissed and granted your motion without prejudice with leave to amend. Maybe I'm not making sense to you.
But, Your Honor, I think that would occur any time. That's sort of the distinction between de novo review and review for abuse of discretion.
Well, I think it's the distinction between a district judge and an appellate judge.
But, Your Honor, if the...
Wouldn't the distinction be on the basis for the judge's ruling on the 12B6 motion? Here, isn't it how you interpret a statute to see whether or not the party as fully pled falls within the statute? That clearly would have to be with prejudice. If, in fact, discovery or enough information hadn't been developed as to whether or not she might fit within the statute by a factual assertion, that could be without prejudice. But if it's a question of how whether or not the statute covers a person in her status, how could that be anything but with prejudice?
And certainly the first issue we raise in the appeal deals
with... But I'm saying, wouldn't that have to be with prejudice? That's just a question of whether or not the statute itself, your argument is the statute doesn't give coverage for this person to bring this suit.
Correct, Your Honor.
It's not that she didn't allege the proper facts. It's just the facts are correct. and the statute doesn't cover that set of facts.
That is correct, Your Honor. We've asserted that only a party may pursue a Section 1985 claim. That certainly can't be cured by any
amendment. So that's the limit of your 12B6.
To complaint, we have asserted that under Section 1985-2, the type of overt acts which constitute a violation.
And what about the defamation claim? Did you move to dismiss that?
We did move to dismiss that, Your Honor, and the district court denied that motion to dismiss.
Is that a factually based motion, or is that a legal motion?
Your Honor, we asserted that the type of allegations there did not give rise to,
so
to defamation
based.
And some statute of limitations. So, yeah. Yeah, so that
right.
remains.
I think we've gone through the red light, been ticketed, ready to take. We'll take a little break, but we'll come down to Greek Council first.
Thank you.
No, okay.
Just like, okay. Honestly, we'll take a brief recess.